welcome to the Freaking Awesome Podcast. It is Monday, April 24th, 2017. I'm Benjamin Abaya, and joining me today is my hookable twin brother, John Abaya.
I'm married, Ben, so you can't say that on the podcast that I'm hookable anymore.
Oh, I don't even know if that's the right term for it.
I don't know. Is that a thing where if you're single, you say, oh, he's hookable or she's hookable?
I don't know. You can hook them up. I have not single too, so I don't even know what that means. How are you, John?
I'm okay. Weather-wise, I think we haven't done an update on weather. It is spring, and then I'm just sneezing and really bad. My sinus is bad. I have, like, huge headaches sometimes. I don't know if you're like this, where in your sinus, you know, above your eyebrows, my sinus pressure is, like, really bad right now.
Mine's the same way. I also have like bad, not sinuses, but it's more like I just sneeze a lot.
And okay, yeah.
Yeah. And just like, you know, when you're outside, it's just the same reaction, sneezing, itching eyes and whatnot.
Yeah, same here.
So for those who are have allergies this season, well, yeah, just try any
take
sort
Claritin.
Of... Yeah,
brought
take
you Claritin. By Claritin.
Yeah. but yeah, try to just stay in and whatnot if possible. I don't know. No, don't stay in.
Don't
try
stay
to go
in.
Outside as
yeah,
much
just
as
go
possible.
Outside.
Yeah. Wear goggles.
Take it. A what?
Wear goggles or a mask.
Oh, goggles, yeah. You remember we used to, as a kids, I think I wore it more than you. I wore goggles and a mask because I was so bad.
I don't know about the mask, but I did wear goggles.
No, the mask by like a bandana over our face.
Yeah, I didn't wear goggles. Yeah. I wore goggles mostly.
Yes, it's like swimming goggles, like pressure tight onto our eyes. So any grass things won't go in our eyes.
Yeah, we had a terrible like... allergies when it comes to our eyes, like itchy eyes and whatnot.
Yeah,
I think that's I don't think I have it that much anymore, but yeah, still.
Yeah, same here, but still. Yeah.
If you're new to the podcast, we should discuss and give our impressions of what we watched, listened, played, or read throughout the week, and we conclude the episode with a main discussion. This week's video game and main discussion is Flint Hook, so looking forward to that discussion. But before any of that, we have a teaser trailer talk. This teaser trailer talk is coming from the Sci-Fi Channel, which is a new series developed by David S. Goyer and Damian Kindler. This week's trailer talk is Krypton.
Kal-El, my future grandson. By the time you hear these words, your birth world will be a distant memory. The House of El led a revolution against tyranny. The story of your family isn't how we died, but how we lived.
So that is the television series from Sci-Fi Channel. Here is this plot synopsis from IMDb. The story of Superman's grandfather as he fights for justice on his home planet. This stars Cameron Koof, I believe that's how you say his name, Georgina Campbell, Ian McKinley, and Elliot Cowan. Those all sound like English, British, UK actors. So I'm not surprised seeing the trailer. They seem all have an English accent of some sort. But John, what is your relationship with Krypton or Superman as a whole? And what did you find this trailer appealing knowing that it's a sci-fi original content television show?
First off, I'm an Earthling and a Kryptonian. Is that a thing? So I have no relationship to Krypton.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Closer to what you call it, humans, I guess. Are they human? I guess they're humanoid, right? In Krypton?
They're...
If you have to, like, categorize them. Because
yeah, they're humanoid, yeah, I guess.
I'm not, like, a huge Superman fan. I know of him, and I don't know anything about Krypton, really. I just know it blew up, and then Superman was sent here. Whatever they showed on Man of Steel, the Zack Snyder movie, and bits of the original Superman, the Richard Donner ones, that's all I know. Like, I don't know anything about their technology, how they live their lives, and whatnot. I never really dived in the comic books, so I have no... Whatever they throw in this show, I guess that's it. Like, that's for me. Like, that's for the general audience who's going to watch it. And watching this trailer, I was kind of surprised because when it opens, it shows the old 52 logo, DC 52, the one where it's peeling. So I don't know how long has this TV series been in development.
Development-wise, like pre-production, it's been since 2014 when Man of Steel came out.
They don't have the new DC logo. That's why I'm like, whoa, this is odd because they don't use that logo at all, the peeling off. It's called the new 52 logo, basically. It looks like it's part of the movie. I did not know how...
Like Man of Steel.
Yeah, visually it looks like a movie. Like, oh, wow. They spent a lot. I don't know when you... I don't... You know, it's a pilot episode probably, and that's it. Like, and most of the episodes will be grounded into, like, alleys of Krypton or whatever. They maybe just have those... The airing shot, or what you call it? When they show, like, a landscape of a city. Like
aerial
those
view?
Aerial view. It looks like that. But yeah, I don't even know if it's part of the movie verse or the whatever, the DC cinematic universe. It looks like it's part of it. When you told me it's the grandparents of Superman, I was like, oh, okay, that makes perfect sense. Like, I didn't know, I wasn't sure if it was the dad, but he kind of sounds like Russell Crowe when he talks. I was like, oh, okay, but you said grandparents. Okay, yeah, that's great. Like, if it's like hundreds of years before even the thought of like blowing up the planet or whatever, the planet before it blows up, it makes sense. It makes sense of what they're wearing because they're not wearing those armors like they do in the movie, but they have like similar technology and the atmosphere feels exactly like the Man of Steel movie. So yeah, I'm kind of excited. I was kind of surprised that it was leaked out on the trailer or in the internet. So I was like, oh, okay. So, and yeah, to know like it's hard to find this trailer now. If if you're like realized or came to this podcast, oh, there's a trailer for this. Yeah, good luck on finding it. It's really hard to find now.
I just a warning that it is a leak trailer. I think technically they did they did bring it out to the interweb, but for some reason they pulled it out already. Like they removed it all existence of it in the internet.
Do you remember the teaser trailer when it came out of the planet just blowing up or reverse blow up, like it's going reverse?
And
it
Yeah, I do.
So basically it looks like that, because the ending of the trailer does that basically.
Yeah. But overall, like, I really thought, like, visually for a sci-fi television show, it looked great. I used to watch Battlestar Galactica. I only watched like a couple seasons of it, but it has like that same production value, but even better. From the visual effects to the CGI to the practical, it all like synthesized very well. I'm talking about Krypton, like from the leak trailer. With that said, though, I also think this should be a great like 10 episode series, taking like the Game of Thrones route or HBO's model of television show route, where you just have this condensed, more satisfying storytelling with 10 episodes. I do like the love the idea that Krypton was like this tyranny or under a tyranny, that there was this government that was like almost like a dictatorship, and then like the House of El helped overthrow whatever that government may that be. It kind of connects with like the idea of who Superman is. You know, he's this wholesome, a crusader for truth and justice. So I thought that was really cool what they did. Other than that, I don't know when they're going to release this. It seems like they're just going to be released a pilot and that's it. I'm speculating that the budget was so high that they cannot continue on this show, or the criticism towards like Man of Steel and Dawn of Justice wasn't probably that great when it comes to like what fans and critics liked about it. So I think they were just like cautious of like, oh, we can't rehash this story again and expect a crowd. But I think they could have done it justice with it. Like, I hope they do something. The idea of it is really cool, just basing an entire show just on Krypton and the grandfather of Superman. Yeah. Other than that, yeah, that's Krypton on Sci-Fi Channel. We don't know when it's going to come out. It says they're coming soon in the teaser
2017.
Trailer. Yeah, 2017. So I'm not even sure if that's correct, too.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's like an old trailer, like an old cut of the trailer.
Yeah, like probably from like a year ago, possibly. Other than that, I think that's it for what that trailer talk or teaser trailer talk is. Moving along, talking about British actors, John... Oh, yeah. You've watched something from across the pond. what did you watch lately?
So I recently watched Doctor Who.
I'm Bill. I serve chips. He's a professor, or a lecturer, or as I call him, Dr. Watt. And now we go everywhere.
It's like a
spaceship.
Kitchen.
Any space?
Where are we?
Which way is that?
What's a Dalek?
Can I use the toilet? Any time.
Get in!
Ah! And now I see everything differently.
Where are we?
Basically in the middle of a war. And it's not as bad as it sounds.
I'm the doctor. I will save all your lives, and when I do, you will spend the rest of them wondering who I was.
Are you out of your mind?
Yes, completely, but that's not a recent thing.
The first episode of season 10, it's called The Pilot, and I think they deserve that title of this episode. So if you're new to Doctor Who, it's a space guy that travels with his little TARDIS. It's a time and dimensional, I forgot the full thing, but
I think you're underselling the whole thing right now.
Yes. But it's a long time series from the 50s. It's celebrated 50 years. But this season, they actually introduce a new companion. Her name on the show is Bill Potts. It's played by Pearl Mackey. If you watch the Christmas special, Matt Lucas still reprises his role as Nardole. I think I'm saying his name right. And Peter Capaldi is the Doctor. He is either the 13th or 12th or 14th. It's whether if you count the War Doctor. I don't know. It's hard to tell now. When they retconned some stuff earlier, or in the past like 5 years, they retconned some stuff. But
really quick, I haven't even watched any of the Peter Capaldi. What's his name?
Yeah, that's how you say it.
Yeah, his version of the Doctor. So this is going to be interesting when you're giving this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go on.
So it continues his adventure. I think this is his third season of being a doctor after taking it from Matt Smith, the previous one. He's still doing a great job. I personally like this doctor because he gives a sense of urgency a little more than Matt Smith. And he seems wiser because he's being played by an older gentleman than Matt Smith. I think Peter Capaldi still pulls it off as a doctor. But I think this main episode doesn't really focus on that. It's more of a focus. It focused on reintroducing the Doctor to a new generation, and a new generation that their companion will be Bill Potts, basically. And the first shot, this is not minor spoilers on the show, the first shot of this episode, I think, is one of the best shots. It's basically in the office of the Doctor, and I won't tell you why he's in the office, but it shows his desk, and his desk has like a little cup holder, and his cups sonic screwdrivers is a device that the Doctor used to basically, if he's in a tight situation, he uses it. It's not Ex Machia. Is that right?
That is right.
Okay, it's an Ex Machia device, basically. But though it only works on, or it doesn't work on wood, basically. That's all it is. So they show that, and they show a picture of River Song. River Song is a character on the show that's the love interest of the Doctor, and it shows another companion. I forgot her name, or it's a granddaughter of the Doctor. Another picture, I believe that's her. It's a black and white picture, and then you could tell like he has history because they have a picture that's from black and white to a colored picture. You know, a picture of River Song that's colored, so you know it's shot today and stuff like that. But it just shows like the history of the Doctor. About the Doctor, I think like I said earlier, the show does a great job basically reintroducing you to him, but also give you a companion that doesn't know anything about the Doctor, and she literally like questions everything he does, and she has like a great curiosity to her that I think has been missing in the last couple of years. Most of the companions were either they introduce her in like an episode that like they really want to go out with the Doctor. It felt weird in a way, not weird, but it felt like the
same. They voluntarily just want to do it because they want an adventure, but they never question like, oh, we're traveling in space and time and all this kooky stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then that's why I think like the title of the episode is great. It's called The Pilot. It does venture off to like why is it called The Pilot, and they do a great job. Similar to like how Lost, the pilot episode, is probably about the pilot in Lost.
Yeah.
Similar similar tone, not similar tone, but same way they do it.
Context of why they had that as a title, yeah.
And then it's kind of cool because in this is the first LGBTQ character or companion for the Doctor. So Pearl Mackey plays Bill Pox. She is a black woman, English, I think, in England. And she plays not even but she plays a different part than most of the companions. Like I said, she's curious and stuff.
Oh,
like
so
that.
Does she have like a profession? Like what's her profession?
No, so that's the best part. Her back history is still a mystery. So you don't really know what's her thing. You know that there is a touching moments in this episode. I literally this is so sweet. When you learn about little about her history and how the Doctor is actually evolved in it and stuff like that is like kind of cool. Like in the past episodes of Doctor, it seemed like the Doctor always has a connection to his companions, and in this season, in the past seasons, the Doctor is trying to get away from companions, but he doesn't want to hurt them anymore. Burden them with the thing. I don't know why he has Matt Lucas still. I guess Matt Lucas' character is on the ship because he owes the Doctor his life. So he's I don't know how you say that too, where you owe your debt basically to the Doctor. So
he could owe his,
He's an alien too. So, but he still looked like Matt Lucas with, you know, bald with no eyebrows. Lucas. If you guys don't know him, look him up. Watch Little Britain and then you'll know who I'm talking about.
He's featured in many other American films too.
Yes. Yeah. He's a good character actor, even though he's playing like similar parts, but he's great and funny too. The alien they introduced in this episode is very cool, and so I watched this. My kids never really watch Doctor Who with me. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but this is the first time it was just them watching it with me, and they actually got involved and they were like guessing what's going to happen next. And the monster of the week, quote unquote, is very scary, and then it actually scared them a couple of times, and I kind of thought that was kind of cool and ballsy, like they got this monster. Even though Doctor Who's like considered like a kid's show in many ways, they still scare them. And they play those games like Five Nights at Freddy, and I think there's a new one called Blinky where they do the jump scares, so they're kind of used to it. But at the same time, the way the alien looks in here is really scary. It reminds me of the Ring girl.
Yes. Is this like they introduced a new alien?
Yes, this is a new alien, brand new alien. I don't even know if the alien doesn't have like an actual name. I think it's the pilot. That's what I think it's called the pilot, I guess. The if you have to like give a name to this alien. But yeah, overall I love this episode. It's a great way to, like I said, to introduce you if you're brand new to Doctor Who, don't know what's happening and why is he in this weird TARDIS ship that's, you know, shaped like a phone booth. It's a good way to introduce new people to it.
So I stopped when Matt Smith stop too. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, can I go back and just watch this pilot episode? And
yep.
I'm probably gonna go back.
Okay, so currently the first episode is free. They air the second episode on Saturdays. While we're recording this, the second episode already released already. So I haven't watched that one yet. So I don't know how she is. The first episode takes place mainly on Earth. So I wonder how she is, like many companions, when they actually go to space and figure out like what's happening. Why is this world here? Yeah. So
she'll be overwhelmed. With everything,
overwhelmed.
Probably.
Yeah. We'll see.
Okay. So that's Doctor Who, which is now the first pilot, I guess, the first episode of... What season is this now? Or series?
Season
10. Series 10, okay.
So they used to call it series, but they went back to seasons? I don't know. It's just very confusing.
I think it just works with the American crowd. Because series for us is like television series.
Yep.
But over there, you know, like the whole... flat and apartment. I don't know what they call their apartment.
Or chips is like French fries. And
Yeah. So that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's Doctor Who. You could watch that on BBC on Saturdays or try to get like the hookup with BBC. I don't know how.
BBC America too.
Oh yeah, BBC America.
So you watch the first episode right now free with no login or anything like that.
The showrunner still...
Stephen Moffat.
Yeah, okay.
It's still Stephen Moffat, yeah.
Okay, just making sure. So cool. I probably go and jump on that sometime this week if I have time. I really do want to go back to watching Doctor Who, but I just don't have time. And I was never turned off by Peter Capaldi's. I think I'm saying his last name wrong. But
you are.
Yeah. Okay. His interpretation of the Doctor. It's just at the time I think there was so much other stuff to watch. So yeah, just looking forward to that. So moving on, this is a good segue because I am also going to talk about this British English, you know, director. His new film just came out. His film is called Free Fire.
Oh, everybody, calm the fuck down!
Here we go.
Oh, now we're cooking.
We'd like to leave with our money,
uh-huh.
And I'm sure that you boys would like to leave with the weapons.
Fuck! Go for the case.
What?
You're a bird. They're not going to shoot the bird.
Shit, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, you little asshole.
Here we go. Look out for North.
So that is a clip from the trailer, Free Fire. The director is Ben Wheatley. This is written and written by his wife and himself, Amy Jump and Ben Wheatley. She also co-edited the film too. This is from IMDb. Once again, the plot synopsis, set in Boston in 1978. A meeting in a deserted warehouse between two gangs turns into a shootout and a game of survival. The film stars Michael Smiley, Brie Larson, Cillian Murphy, Armie Hammer, and Charlton Copley. Charlton Copley is best well known for in his debut film, District 9, if many people don't know who that is. Or, like, he's a really great character actor, too. So diving into this, I've watched his other film, Kill List, which is a great film that came out like almost 10 years ago, or 5 years ago, 6 years ago. He's made other films too, I think, High Rise, and I'm trying to think of another one, The Fields of England, which I've never watched those two. But I know his sensibilities. He's a great director when it comes to horror or anything that's terrifying. He's a great also like director when it comes to tension. Like I think he does it really well. So this film is basically like a mindless gunplay with a bit of substance. Overall, it has like a lot of wit and style. It has great direction by Ben Wheatley. But I don't think there's like this hidden context in the film's plot, story, even the characters. So it boils down to just these two misunderstanding characters that just goes violently and hectically wrong. And people are just in the middle of it. And I think that's really cool. And I think that's why it's not that profound. But the situation is very distraught. And I think it builds tension among the characters because you have several characters just shooting at each other. And this is a great film when it comes to character actors too, to like chew on the scene. Like Cillian Murphy's great at it. Like all these characters are pretty unrecognizable when it comes to like their past roles. Aside from Brie Larson, I think Brie Larson does a good job, but her screen presence is not all there. Like they have her in her poster, but she's barely in the film.
Is she an action star in here, or
None of them are action stars.
But does she play a important role, or is she just?
They all play equally important roles. Okay. Like there is no actual protagonist in here. It's basically a like because the director he plays like games like Counter-Strike and like those first-person shooters. I think he designed this as a way of like you are invested in these set characters, but there's certain characters you want them to die. There's certain characters you want to live, and they're all pretty equally even out. Like they're all pretty gray. Like none of them are pretty black and white. Like no one's a terrible. I mean, they're all terrible people, I believe, but they're like they have degrees of terribleness, I guess you could say. In an interview with the Q&A with Jeff Goldsmith, this is a podcast about filmmaking, most importantly, like screenplay. Ben Wheatley, like the origin of the story is he got it from this Miami like gunfight between like a bunch of crooks and police officers.
That is real?
Yeah, that is real.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like years ago. Like okay. That's how he got. That's where the idea stemmed from.
Huh.
Wow. He didn't go into like great detail about what the shootout was, but he started to research, and he actually in this film he tried to subvert like the notion that everyone could operate the gun really well. Like it just because you know how to operate a gun doesn't equate as you as being this master gun handler, like John Wick or James Bond.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Instead, because like police officers, or if you're in an actual gunfight, you're constantly under pressure. And to its contrary, it's actually the opposite. Like you're actually shooting everywhere. You're not shooting these like you know, steel targets. You're shooting moving targets. Unless
you're not
like
blindly shooting and still hitting your target.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. They are blindly shooting, but they don't hit
their target. That's
yeah, none of them are realistic. Like kill shots.
Kill shots. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Unless you're like this special ops or a decorated soldier, then you probably could handle guns under pressure really well. Which I find like the whole film fascinating because it does dive into that. Like these are just ordinary people with ordinary guns. Like none of them have there's a semi-automatics and automatics in the actual film, but everyone just has a regular pistol or a 9mm. I don't know guns that well, but like they're basically just simple guns. And taking that the setting is in Boston, 1978, not a lot of people had like really high compulsive guns. I don't know how you call it.
Animation.
Yeah,
or...
yeah. So I found that interesting. And then he built a story around that there's these people who are shooting at each other, but they're not really good at shooting. So it's really cool. I think it's a film that I recommend if you just want to watch like something mindless. I don't want to say mindless as something to put down, but I don't think you're going to take away like this something profound. Like I don't think there will be film analysis into this unless you get to the importance of like gun control and everything. That's kind of you could probably dive into that, the gun control in 1978 Boston. But everyone plays their characters really well. But it's all on theaters right now, Free Fire. It's an independent film, so I highly support independent films, even though it has large stars. I think the budget's really small. Yeah. Something interesting about him filming this is that he actually shot everything with like several cameras all at the same time. So instead of he was cutting as he was going, basically. Huh. Yeah.
That's which an is odd way to do it, because what if it messes up and then
yeah, that's what a lot of people were
that's
saying.
That's a waste of film or a waste yeah. of time.
Yeah, but he knowing his craft, he's been doing it for like almost more than a couple of decades films. So I think he's, you know, gotten his craft down really well. He's one of those directors that is like a quick and shoot. Like he just wants a film to be quickly shot. Like even though he knows how to delicately write the script and do posts or pre-production, I think he's quick at everything because everything is pretty much his hands touches everything. But yeah, that's Free Fire once again out in theaters. Check it out. Moving on, our main discussion this week is a video game developed and published by Tribute Games. This week's main discussion is Flint Hook. That is a little bit from the trailer of Flint Hook. If you recognize the music, it's a really great music. I think the music is by Patrice Bogelt. It's very French last name, so mm-hmm. I don't know how to say I apologize to Patrice. Anyway, this video game is a fast action platformer with roguelike elements. Some of you might be asking, what is roguelike elements? It's a subgenre in the role-playing video games. Most roguelikes are like dungeon crawlers. Usually they have a procedural generated game levels. There's always player progression. You're usually searching for a key, a map, or a treasure. But most importantly, and I think this is highly like in every game, almost all roguelikes, there's permanent death, which means that once you die, you start all over from the beginning of the game. So far, Flint Hook, you play as Captain Flint Hook, this space pirate who's boarding and looting ships because you have to achieve these bounties that are given to you. You have the ability to slow time. You also have a plasma gun. But the biggest characteristic for Captain Flint Hook is that you have this awesome grappling hook. Think of Legend of Zelda, like Link uses, or the best comparison is like any iterations of Bionic Commando video games. Have you played those, John?
Yeah, I remember the old ones. They were pretty fun when you actually get hooked. I never played the remake, the more 3D version. I think we reviewed that a long time ago.
Yeah, we thought
it was good to a point.
Yeah. But John, what'd you find? Have you played a lot of roguelike, and did you find Flint Hook a really compelling game to play?
So for tribute games, I played actually a past tribute game called Wizorb.
Yes, me too.
So it's like a puzzle breakout type game. So it's Breakout, the one where you're guiding a ball to break thing. So
it's an old like PC game too. Mm-hmm. Like usually people probably played it when they're younger, but it's an arcade game.
Mm-hmm. So in Wizorb, it's taking that idea and putting a RPG spin to it. That was like their first game. I didn't know they made this game until you told me. I was like, or you told me about it, and I was very surprised that they went from Wizorb, and they have other games in between, but then now they have Flint Hook, and I feel like Flint Hook is one of the most original ideas from them. Most of the time they take like an idea and then make more to it, or what do you call that, broaden it basically. But Flint Hook looks really cool. The only real roguelike I ever played was Rogue Legacy, I think it's called, where it's similar to here, but you play like a knight and you go to the same game style, not as Flintwood, but like a roguelike where you get things and you get treasures and stuff like that, and then you upgrade them if you get enough treasure, and if you finish most of the level, you play the boss. And that's how Flint Hook reminds me, but it has a cool mechanic with the hook, basically, and he has a little gun and everything. I was pleasantly surprised of the gameplay because it feels very fast. The controls, I thought I won't get used to, but when you get used to it, it's very fun. You have to just understand where the little hooks are in the game. Literally, there's like a little hook. If you miss it, you'll just fall. So you really have to be precise on it. So unlike most games, you can't really guide the hook. Oh, I think there is like an upgrade to do that, or with the gun or something, but I haven't found.
You can technically guide it, but it's not.
So you use the directional button on your, or the D-pad basically on your controller, and then you go up, down, or left, or up, left, and right, basically wherever the hook is at. And most of the time, the hook will figure itself out and then know where to go to. And I think that was kind of cool. Like, oh, I don't really have to think about it really, and I just have to pay attention to avoid the enemies and whatnot. I have to say that I haven't played much of the game. I haven't even seen the first boss. That's how difficult this game is. I feel so in the game you have to like raid ships, and then after another ship you're done with one. If you're done with one ship, you raid another one until you get to a point where you find the boss. And then it's hard because the boss, when you go around like other roguelikes, you don't know what's in the next room. You have to basically figure out what's in the next room, and then you have to find your way until sometimes you find like an object that's a map. And then that's very useful, but most of the time you're just going in there without knowing what's in the next room. And sometimes it's just a whole bunch of enemies that can potentially just kill you in one hit, and that's very devastating. And life is, even though you have like life in this game, it's to pick up like health packs or like food, it's rare in here. I don't know if you had the same problem as me, where I'm just literally just buying most of my money is going towards that, where my health, because it's hard to up. Or when I see like a merchant in the in a ship, that's where most of my money is going to. And yeah, it's. I have to play more, but my overall impression, I really like this. I will continue playing this. I might make a video of this and just put it, might be like one of our first videos, I guess, on here. We don't have like a YouTube page, but just the gameplay is very exciting to me and fun, and just the way he moves and everything. And the art style is very beautiful. It has that almost 16, 32-bit, I guess, look to it. The music is fine. A lot of characters remind me of SpongeBob characters. A lot of them are like fish characters. In space, I guess. I like the aesthetic where it's a spaceship, but everything's still made out of wood. So that's kind of cool. I don't know if Flint Hook has like a face. I haven't seen him because when you die, his little ghost thing comes off his head and then he floats away. So I don't know if you're actually playing a character, like a human being or a fish or anything. I'm wondering if they go reveal like a Metroid a little bit, like, oh, you're playing a girl the whole time. It'll be kind of odd because they don't really say anything about that. Like in today's age, like, is that really a surprising reveal now?
But yeah.
It's interesting. Like you play this, you have like a hooded mask that looks like a ghost. And yeah, it's overall, I really like the game so far. And yeah, like I said, it's very difficult, but I'm willing to learn the mechanics.
Speaking of the mask, I don't know if you noticed, like, in the beginning stages, this is not a spoiler, but when you're walking through your ship, like, you have this huge painting and you see yourself, but then there's like, it's covered up by this other figure, like by a blanket or some sort.
Oh no, I have not
sheet.
Seen it.
Yeah. don't you notice that when you were going through?
I don't really notice that. What, is this on your ship?
Yeah, it's on your ship. Like in the beginning stages when you're doing tutorial. Like I found that odd. Like, oh, they're hiding this character, but like I guess there's like a relationship with that character, but they don't ever show who he is.
Maybe he's the son.
Or he or she. Yeah, I don't know. Other than that, like, yeah, I do agree that the health or any other items is sparse. They appear sporadically in every level. Oh, not every, in like a couple of stages. And then when you do need it, like, it doesn't appear at all. I do find this game really, really fun. But like you said, it's really difficult. Because I don't usually play video games that are roguelike. The creators even said this is roguelite. Like, yeah, it's not I all the way say. Roguelike.
It's not as difficult as roguelike.
Yeah. But I do find the video game like quite challenging, especially if you haven't played roguelike video games. I do like the mechanics. They're intuitive in a sense where I could just use my D-pad and then like it does do this 360 axis of like wherever you want to go with your plasma gun or your grappling hook, which is really cool, which feels really great too. Like I could go anywhere. Like you said, the pixel art is really, it's wonderful. I love the art direction, although it might be inspired by like old 16-bit video games. It still had its own aesthetic and its identity, which I admire. And once again, like the music from Patrice Bojalt, I think his name is really great. I even have it in my mind right now when I'm thinking about this game. So overall, I thought this was like a wonderful surprise. It surpassed surpassing the beginning stages. I highly recommend it if you could go through all that. although I haven't surpassed any of the beginning stages I meant. But I really recommend it for all people. It's accessible. Like, I don't think you have to play other roguelike games, but I think you just have to have at least this interest in roguelike games. Like, I think it's a good starter for roguelike games. Mm-hmm.
I think one of the mechanics we were missing, though, is the slow-mo. He has, like, a little belt. I forgot what it's called. The chrono belt or something like that?
I do mention it, but I mentioned it when I was describing the game, but I don't think I've used it as much, except for, like, there's these beams
that show up,
mm-hmm. which is really cool. That's the only time you use it. But there's sometimes where, if there's an enemy that's so fast that you just want to slow down the level, that you have to use that as a way to defeat the enemies.
And these areas, is like, I think you off air you told me, like, it reminds me of like Mega Man boss stages. These are really tight areas where you don't really get far from anywhere, or you can't go too far from the enemy, where you have to really play with the landscape to know where recognize the pattern of where he's going, and then figure out, oh, okay, if I go here real quick, I can kill him with my beam shot. Or sometimes they have like a bubble shield you have to take with the hook off. Yeah, that's very difficult.
Didn't really realize that you have to do that.
Yep, and same then, here.
For the I was first like, oh, cool. Times. Yeah, it feels very cool when you find out that's what you have to do. I love that they still have merchants throughout the game that you could buy stuff. I don't know if anything is worthy of How much do you get?
Just like I said, the food is the only thing that I really buy, and they're pretty cheap. Like they're 80, so you get coins a lot, and you, like in one run you can probably get over 100 or 200 coins, and then for your next run, you can probably, you know, get a merchant, find a merchant real quickly, and then stock up with food. But the food isn't that much. It's like your health is 100, like 100, I don't know, HP, I guess you could say. If you manage to have 100 by end of one, you know, run, that's amazing. Most of the time I'm like in the 60s, and then when I do find a merchant, he probably will give me like 20 more, so I'm like 80 back to 80 and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had it 100% always. It's like almost there, but never like, I know one thing about these roguelike games, everything is always randomized. Like mm-hmm. there's, you can never play a level the same pathway.
Mm-hmm.
So like even like what you get isn't also always there too. So I admire that. It's really, that's, I think that's where the difficulty level is coming from, is that you have to work what you have.
Yep.
And that's pretty cool. I'm going to continue playing this game. I highly recommend it once again. It's on, I think, all platforms, Steam, Xbox One, PlayStation 4. I think that's it. Like right,
that's
now.
An all platform, Ben. You're man.
Oh, the Switch, yeah. Nintendo.
I don't know if it's coming out on the Switch, but if it does, I can't wait to pick that up for that instead.
Yeah, and it's fairly cheap. Like, I'm not saying that the cost of a game equates to like the also how good the game is, but for what it costs, is really great. Like, you don't, mm-hmm. at least you're not spending $60 on like a game that you don't like. At least you have like, it's about like roughly $15, and what you get, especially if you love like that classic 16-bit type of game feel, it's really worthy for that price. But yeah, that's our main discussion this week. Flint Hook, highly recommend, I think, from both of us. John, where can they find you on the interweb?
You can find me on Twitter at AbayaArts.
You could find me at Benjamin Abaya on Twitter and Instagram. You could find all of us and all our episodes on thefreakingawesome.com. You could find us on Twitter as I'm always forgetting this. TFA Now.
Yes.
Is that correct? Yes. On Twitter.
Or like us on Facebook.
Or like us on Facebook. That's at The Freaking Awesome too, right?
Yes.
Yes. And also, if you have any questions, comments, recommendations, please email us on contacts@thefreakingawesome.com. This week, we don't have any entry to the 17 Freaking Awesome Things of 2017. But we're looking forward, like in future episodes, I think I might add something. I just have to insert it next episode, I guess you could say. But I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm John Abaya.
And this has been the Freaking Awesome Podcast.